Good morning. It's sort of a heavy reading to start us off, but some of you who've been around for a while and have seen me preach a few times know that occasionally paragraphs are in the wrong order, pages don't always show up like they're supposed to. So today I didn't print anything, so we won't have that problem. So a little bit about me. My name's Katie Michael Sanchez. I've been a member here for a few years now. Grew up Unitarian Universalist on the East Coast. I went to seminary at Star King School for the Ministry in California almost right after my undergraduate year, and sort of floated for a while, not really sure what direction of ministry my life would take after that. I realized being a full-time congregational minister wasn't a great fit, though I do love being in the pulpit. It didn't sort of seem like the direction that I was in. So after a few years of floundering, I decided that I would search out a new opportunity for ministry for myself, and I applied to a program in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I was living in Santa Fe at the time, for what's called clinical pastoral education, which is the educational program that one requires to become a hospital chaplain, and often a police chaplain or a prison chaplain. There's lots of different varieties of chaplaincy out there. So I spent a year in a hospital in Albuquerque where I worked roughly 35 clinical hours a week in the hospital and then did 10 hours of seminar on top of that. So the hospital that I worked there is quite different than where I'm working now here in Bozeman. It had 450 beds. We had four staff chaplain, six residents, so who, like me, were there to study. So we had a chaplain in the building 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We always had someone in there. That meant if it was overnight, we had a little sleep room where we'd put the pager right next to us, and this will come back in one of my stories. But we were always there. So now my new job here, working as a chaplain up at Bozeman Deaconess, it's a much smaller hospital. It's a more of a community hospital. We have one staff chaplain, our manager, who works full-time, who's there Monday through Friday. And then we have one part-time chaplain who's usually there in the afternoons. We have a volunteer chaplain who's there actually quite a bit. He does a great job covering during the days, during the weeks. And then there's a handful of us, probably five or six, who are what's called casual call. So what we do is we carry a pager overnights and on the weekends in case anything is to happen. We get paged for every death and every trauma that comes in through the hospital. So that right now, that's the majority of what I'm doing, though I am working as well up at Hillcrest with the Assisted Living Center, doing some guided meditation and a reading group and things like that. But really what my role is there, and what the role of a chaplain is in general, is providing spiritual, emotional support to the patients, to the family, and to the staff. So we're kind of there for everyone. And one of the things I love particularly about chaplaincy as a ministry is that it's not about me. It's not about what I believe. It's not about if I use the word God or if I pray to Jesus or if I pray on a prayer rug. It's really about being there for the patient where they are with what they need. So over my time in this role, I have learned quite a bit about myself and about the process of grief and pain that goes along with everything that happens in hospitals. So in the reading this morning, one of the things that Kate Braestrup says about where God is in the midst of this is where there is love. So my first story for you today is about probably my second week in Albuquerque. It was my first overnight shift. So you're by yourself when it's overnight. I was really nervous. I was wanting to make sure if I fell asleep that I would hear the pager. You know, so I was up in my little sleep room. Some chaplain said, you know, oh, it's okay if you put on pajamas, you know, just change back into your regular clothes if the pager goes off. But I was like, nope, I cannot risk it. I'm laying like on the top of the blankets, totally like, don't wrinkle my clothes, like. And I've got the pager next to me, and I even called the operator and said, Can you just send me a test page? I just need to make sure the pager's working. So I'm there, it's 10 o'clock, it's 11 o'clock. There's a little TV on. I'm watching reruns of like Home Improvement or Roseanne or something that's on there. And I'm nodding off and I'm nodding off. And all of a sudden the pager starts beeping. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And I get up and I grab my pager and I put it in my pocket and I run up the stairs. I didn't even check to see what was wrong. I just saw, okay, go to this room. So I get up, it's a medical unit. I get to the room, I'm like, I'm the chaplain, I'm here, what do you need? And the nurse says, oh, we have an elderly patient, she's kind of confused, she's been crying, she's been having a hard time getting to sleep. We thought you could just offer maybe a prayer for her. So I'm like, all right, I got this. So I get into the room, and I'm standing there next to her bed, and I start to pray, and then I start to sweat. And I'm dizzy, and I'm about to hit the floor. And I'm so embarrassed, right? Like, this is my first night, I'm trying to prove myself. So the patient herself, I don't think even really knew that I was there. But the nursing staff very lovingly took me out of that room, sat me down, put an oxygen tank on me, took my pager, and said, we're gonna put you in a bed in an empty room, and if the pager goes off and it's important, we'll get you. And now, I thought I had done the worst job ever. But what I got to experience that night was how wonderful and caring of workplace I worked in. I also learned that if I'm working an overnight shift, to have some sort of trail mix next to the bed, that no emergency is so emergent that I can't take the time to breathe, to walk slowly, and to prepare myself for whoever it is I'm going to meet. So that's story number one. The next story is also from my time there. And this, let me back up. My own theology has definitely grown and shifted in my experience of being a chaplain. Growing up, God was never a word I used. It was never a word used in my family, occasionally in my congregation, but always with the caveat of God or divine or spirit of love or life or trees or however that works for you. But going into this work as a chaplain and being there for people in their time of grief, I really started to learn that, at least for me, there is something bigger, and there is something that I can rely on. And for me, it's something that I call God, not always, but it's a word that fits for me. And it's something that lives in me and lives outside of me that I can lean on. And a lot of times, as Kate Braestrup said in her reading, our ministry is just about being present. So in this situation, it was a weekday evening. I was wrapping up some charting in the hospital in my office, and I got a page to labor and delivery. And those are usually the scariest pages, because when a chaplain's needed in labor and delivery, it's usually very sad. So I took the time, and I called up to the floor, and I said, you know, I'm the chaplain, I'm coming up. What's going on? And the nurse said, there's a woman who just came in. She's pregnant with twins, and her parents were both just killed in a motorcycle accident. And I thought, what on earth can I say? I think any time a death or a tragedy happens, that's a question we ask ourselves, like, what can I say? What can I do to make it better? How can I be helpful? And it was in that moment that I realized, there is nothing I can say. I just have to be. And I also, still unsure if God is real or God was a thing I believed in or that worked for me, I was like, doesn't matter, I am praying. Whatever is going to hear me or not hear me, I need something bigger right now. So on my walk up there, I just asked God, please be with me. I don't know how to do this. I am only human. This grief is so huge. And as I got up to the hospital room, the patient, she was there on the bed, and her partner, the father of the child, was there with her, and she was just sobbing. As I would too, I imagine, if I was in that situation. And so for a while, all I did was I just sat there. I held her hand and let her cry. And slowly she started to talk. She was mad at God. She was mad at her parents. She was mad at herself. She was worried about her babies, that their grandparents would never see them. Just a litany of pain and grief and sorrow. And again, I just listened and held her hand. And finally she said, "Could you pray for me?" Now, I've reflected on this story a number of times. I actually wrote about it while I was in my clinical pastoral education program as part of my learning process. And I have absolutely no idea what I prayed. It was a moment where I just said, "Okay, whoever you are, whatever there is, give me words that will be of use to these people." And I did. And it didn't fix anything. It didn't change anything, necessarily. I think maybe there was a bit more peace in the room when I left. But often that's not what it's about when we're helpers. So often, in any situation, whether it's in a situation of grief or just more of an everyday situation with a friend or family member who has something on their mind, we go to fixing. We go to, what can I do? How can I do it? Whether it's for our own comfort level or our caretaker parts or whatever. But the thing that I've learned is that really the best thing we can do is to just be there and to listen. And part of the reason why I picked today to tell stories for you is I feel like our stories are what need to be heard. Whether that's the story in the moment of the grief and the accident, whether it's the story of our life as we move towards the end of it, the stories of our joy and our sorrow and our families, that's how we're recognized and that's how we are seen as human. So if you can take anything from that story, it's that think about approaching situations as a listener and as a presence. And really, if you want to be a helper, that's the best way you can do it. That will be so much more beneficial than saying, "Have you read this book?" Or, "Have you heard this podcast on that subject?" Or anything along those lines. That really what we crave as humans is just to be seen and recognized, however we show up. So over my time, over this year there in Albuquerque, and over my time here in Bozeman, another piece of learning, which I think probably everyone's heard, is that everybody grieves in a different way. And I can't tell you how absolutely true that is. You'd think, okay, I've seen it all. There's no surprises. And then you get called down to the emergency room, and the wife of a patient who has been dead since he came in from the ambulance is saying, "Oh, he's just playing a joke. He's gonna wake up." And then the woman down the hall who's punching anything near her because her father has just passed away. And the woman who is lamenting at the top of her lungs, why? And sometimes it's just a blank face. And they're all the right way to do it. There is no wrong or right way to grieve. And whatever comes up for you in a moment of grief is okay and normal and appropriate. As I watch people in my life respond to grief, it has been so helpful. Because like I said, no one does it the same way. And the last story I want to share is a little bit pat on my back. I think I did a good job. But just also how a lot of times when we think about the medical setting, hospitals, health, they're really seen as separate from the rest of our lives. So when we're in a hospital, we're being treated for our symptoms, you know, which body part does what, which medication changes what. But the reality is there isn't any separation from the rest of our lives, even when we're in those moments. So whatever's happening in our lives and our families and our work life, that's all part of what needs to be recognized. So this last story is about a patient that I had who, she was in her mid-20s, and she had burned her back on an old heating pad that hadn't turned off when she fell asleep. So she had all these nasty burns on her back. And she had been in our hospital for a week, and it was not improving. And I talked to one of the nurses on staff, and they're like, yeah, we're just not really sure what's happening with her. She's not really healing. She doesn't seem like she wants to go home. You know, she's doing what she's supposed to, but she's not really, like, engaged in her healthcare process. Could you just go talk to her? In that hospital, because we were there all the time, unlike my work now, a lot of our referrals would just be like, this person's crying. Could you go talk to them? This person didn't eat lunch. Could you go talk to them? Which I think was great. I got, you know, some of my better interactions with patients that way instead of just in emergent situations. So I went and I sat with her and just sort of, as I do as a chaplain, I don't even always use the title when I first meet people. I might say I'm on the spiritual care team. It is off-putting to non-religious folks sometimes. And I said, you know, what's your story? What happened? Why are you here? And we talked for probably 2 hours the first day I saw her. And this story just started to unfold about her past addictions and the child she had when she was a teenager who she felt that she had abandoned. And at this point in her story, she was sober. She was married. She had the child back in her life. But as we talked, I could tell that she hadn't let go and forgiven herself of who she had been previously. She still saw herself as the addicted woman who abandoned her child. Even though in the same breath, she would turn around and say, oh, we got him a new backpack, and he's really happy, and we were playing a game. She just couldn't see past this old person who she was. So being in a hospital setting, I'm thinking about rituals, like what do we do? So here in this congregation, sometimes we've done things where we have something we want to let go of and we light it on fire. We can't light things on fire in a hospital. So instead, what we did was I had her write down all of the things that she associated with who she used to be. All of the negative thoughts, the negative ideas, the memories. And we ripped them up and we flushed them down the toilet. And then she wrote a list of all the things about who she was now. All the things about being a good mom and being a good wife. And she kept those. And she left the hospital 4 days later. So I tell this story not as a like miraculous healing, we prayed the sick away, but to point out that sometimes, like I was saying, that things aren't separate. That what we carry in our lives, we carry into every setting. And sometimes our health is impacted by other realities in our life, and not to overlook that. So, I will wrap up just by saying that being a chaplain has been incredibly fulfilling for me. I've learned a lot about myself and about those I work with. And I think a lot of what you learn in a crisis situation is so applicable to everyday life in smaller ways, yeah. And thank you for listening.